Thank you, choir. And thanks to the youth for sharing an exciting story of their service project. I've heard from them that they want to go back next year. So I hope that our church will support their efforts to return to service next summer with perhaps even many more youth joining the group. Thanks also to Jennifer Norris for directing the program and also for our adult mentors who went with them, taking out 1 week of their busy schedule to be with our youth during that time. Our reading from Luke 16 seems to suggest that Jesus was praising someone who was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. Did Jesus just do that in the Bible? And in fact, Emperor Julian, who was the last emperor of the Constantinian dynasty, used this text to say that Christians, that Jesus was teaching his people to be thieves and liars. Julian was son of Constantine, one of the grandsons, I think. He was the last of the Constantinian emperors in Rome, which had become a Christian dynasty. Yet he wanted to return Rome back to its heyday, and he wanted to challenge the Christian rule in Rome at that point. So he was a philosopher and a scholar, and he read the Bible many times. He grew up in the church. But when he came to this story, he felt that Jesus had gone wrong. Here he was praising this unjust steward for lying through his teeth and cheating his owner the second time. So what are we to make of stories like these in the Bible? Well, I think the simple answer for me is that sometimes we read the Bible and we read it by chapters. But as you know, Bible originally was written without chapters. It was a one long story. It was around the third or fourth century that scholars divided the stories of Jesus into chapters. So if we read this story of the unjust steward and realize that the story right before it is the parable of the prodigal son, then this story makes sense. Because in both of these stories, here you have a man who squanders, in one story a son, and this story a steward, squanders the owner's property. Here you have two men in the story who come to an understanding of who they are in the middle of the story. And then at the end, there's these two men who understand that God is generous and merciful, that God is prodigal, God is extravagant in his mercy and love. But let's look at this story a little, because I've been studying this story for a long time too, and I've always tried to understand what is this story all about. But the details can perhaps tell us something about what is happening in the story. In the beginning, it says that there are three characters. There is the owner, there is a steward, he's a manager of the estate, the farming estate, and then there is the community. And the owner hears from the community that his manager has been cheating him. So we get a sense that the owner must have been a good man, or else people won't tell you that kind of secrets, right? Your own man is cheating you. So then the owner confronts his manager and says, well, what is this I hear about you? Well, when someone comes at you like that, and when you plead the fifth, it generally means that you've done something wrong, right? This manager could have said, well, you know, boss, my grandpa served you and my great-grandpa served you, and maybe I cheated on the side, but should we let that get in the way of our relationship? He could have said that. Or he could have said, well, you know, I have only two set of eyes, and there are other guys under me who are doing all the cheating, and I couldn't control them. Or he could have said, well, bring in those guys who've told you those lies. Let them tell that right in front of me. Or maybe he could have said, or he could have sent some of his influential friends to try to plead his case with the owner. But none of that. He leaves. Before he leaves, the owner says, well, bring me my books, the accounting books. You're fired, right on the spot. But bring me my books. Well, in those days, and I suppose even today, you're fired, but nobody else knows about it yet. You still have the books, right? So in a sense, you still have power. So this manager says, thinks to himself, well, I still have the books. Nobody else knows. So what am I going to do? So he's thinking, and what does he come up with? An even worse cheating scheme, doesn't he? So he thinks, I should try to cook the book so that I'll have a place to go, or I'll be hired some other place. So what does he do? He sends for all the debtors. He doesn't go to their house. He sends for them, one by one, he says. Now, nobody knows that he's no longer the manager. And when you hear that the owner wants to speak to you, you think there's some important news. So everybody comes into the house, and he says, well, how much do you owe the master? Now, of course, he knows how much they own, but he wants to make sure what they think they own. So one man says, I owe him 1,000 gallons of olive oil. So he tells him, well, here it is, the book. Write down, cross that out, and write down 500 and put your signature there. And one by one, he does that to all the people who own the money. Now, probably he didn't have too much time to do this, right? I'm thinking maybe 2 hours at the max, because he's going to take the book back to the owner. But look at the amount, 1,000 gallons of olive oil. Even today, that's expensive, right? In those days, 1,000 gallons of olive oil is something like what a farmer would make in 2 years' time. That's a lot of money. So he cuts that in half. So think about people whose debts are cut in half. Are they happy? Of course they are. They go back to their hometowns, their village, and says, look, the owner is such a great guy. He cut our debts in half. And the steward, this manager, he loves us. He got this great deal for us. He takes the book to the master. Master looks at it, and right away he could tell what he's done. The old debts are crossed out and they are cut in half, or 20%, 30%. And then this is when he says, he praises this manager. Now, when he praises him, is he saying, I praise you because you cheated me? It's more like, what a smart guy you are. You cheated me, but you did it so cleverly. Now, see, the master had two options. He could have gone to the villages, to all the people who owned him money, and told them, look, what my manager done is wrong. It's illegal. He was no longer my manager, so you have to pay back everything. You can think what would happen to that, right? Would the farmers be happy with that news? They would think, you're unfair. There would be protests all over. He says, eat up this debt, and I will remain as generous as people think I am. But actually, he had been generous before, right? Because when he found out that his manager had cheated him, he could have got him arrested, sold him into slavery, but he had just simply fired him, let him continue on with his life. He already had been successful. So Jesus says, be like this man. Be like this unjust steward. Well, how can we be like him? What does he mean by that? What should we be like him? In what way? We can be like him in that he knew that his master, his owner, was a generous man, merciful. So he bet on that when he cheated him the last time. He knew that he hadn't thrown him in jail. Well, I'm going to take advantage. I know this master. He's good and he's generous and he's merciful. Of course, Jesus doesn't call him a hero, yet he says we ought to be as intelligent as this man. When we think about God, what is the first image that we come up with in our minds? What is that? Jesus is teaching us and inviting us to see a God who is so generous to us, who is so loving, who is full of mercy, just like the Father in the story of the prodigal son, who stood at his door expecting his wayward son to return, to embrace him back into the fold. Well, what is the message that Jesus has for the class of 2025? The many books that I've been reading about the future of our economy is that we're going to have a hard time. That there will be more difficulties economically facing our nation. That the class of 2025 will have to be even more competitive, will have to even fight harder for their dollar. And when we begin to think in those terms, when the economists are telling us that things are getting worse and it's going to be difficult for that class of 2025, sometimes even in the church, we tend to think that somehow God must have somehow closed off heaven's doors, that there are not enough things around, that there is enough to share. Yet if there's one truth of the Bible about God, it's that God is generous, that God will walk with us even through the toughest times. So the message that we have for the class of 2025 is that we still are called to be stewards. The earth is the Lord's, Psalm 24 says. And we have been given the job of being stewards of every good thing that God has given us. The class of 2025 needs to see from us models, examples of people who are stewards, even in times when there is lack, even in times when we think we don't have enough. Is it possible for us to live our lives so that we can share with those who do not have enough? I really thank our teachers and the program for sending our youth to Sierra Service Project, that they, as they are growing up, are able to see families, villages which are suffering, which are having a tough time, not because they are lazy or not they are working, but that our society is organized in such a way that they're having a tough time making it, that we have a chance to be part of their lives, to share what we have. Our youth don't have much, yet they have themselves, and they are learning that it isn't only money that counts, but that often it is the heart that speaks much louder than the dollar bills that we put in people's hands. So this week, what can we do in light of this story? First, I believe Jesus asked us to be faithful in small things. Today, in our mission fair, you have a chance to look at all the missions that our church is involved in. And you'll find that many of the tasks that we do are not that we're writing a book or we're appointing a cabinet or eating with the queen or converting a nation or doing great things, but In the list of things that we do, we find that we are invited to visit a person at hospice. We're invited to cook a meal for a homeless person, just one meal. We're invited to teach a Sunday school class of maybe 7 or 8 children. We are invited to share a meal or go to choir rehearsal. Now you might say, well, those are such small things. Does it really make a difference? And this church tells me, and I've heard stories of people who have been touched, that one call, or that you stopped and hear and listen to that one person's complaint, or that you went out of your way to help someone when you didn't have to, that those things made a difference in their life in ways that we can count. Jesus invites us to be faithful in little. I hope that you have make a chance, take the opportunity to visit our tables at the fellowship hall and see where God is calling you to be faithful this week. Even as our youth went to Sierra to serve, maybe God is calling you to serve in a way to take you to a different place so that you can make a difference in our world this day. Thanks be to God for Jesus, who's come to show us the way of how we ought to live, how to serve each other. Amen. Mm-hmm.